Hello, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 5 of The Grand Cast. Today is Friday, July the 28th, 2017, 7:30 p.m., Grand Rapids, Michigan. My guest this evening is Michael Mike Bussler.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for being here.
I'm glad to be here up in your high-rise apartment up in the sky. We were just talking about how spooky it is in the hallway, but it's not spooky in here. I like it. Thanks for having me.
It is pretty spooky out there. I don't know if it's a lighting or what. So I like to start out each episode with the mission statement for the show, which is: the purpose of the Grand Cast is to explore the comedy scene in Grand Rapids, Michigan, as it exists in 2017 through a series of conversations. And then I have two goals for the show, the first of which is to post one new episode weekly, which kind of happened this week. I typoed a copy pasta job and published the first half of Bobby Phillips's episode with the second half of Amy Gaskin's episode. Sorry about that, everyone. You might have to delete the first part and re-download it to get Amy's first part. That's my bad. I would fire the production manager, but it's me.
I think they'll forgive you. I'll forgive you.
Oh, thank you. On behalf of everyone. The second goal is to make at least one person's day better through the creation of quality content. So that's mostly on you, but I'll be here for it.
I think you've done good on both those promises so far. All right. The weekly one that's been happening since you started. You've not missed a week.
There might have been a few stretches of 10 or 12 days, okay. But I've put out two full seasons of 12 episodes.
Yes.
Each corresponding to a solar cycle. So I switch over just after the equinox, and then five episodes. Well, this will be the fifth episode of this season, so the 29th. Episode of the Grand Cast. Okay.
So you're saying it's a true season if it goes by the equinox. I like that.
I take things very literally.
But yes, I admire your dedication to this. I was impressed with that. I listened to it at work with a bunch of dogs, but I could still pay attention to it. I work with dogs. I don't know if you knew this.
Like a vet office or?
No, like a kennel, daycare.
Okay.
Boarding, yes.
Yeah.
Kennel is such like an outdated term. Sounds nasty, but
nobody uses that anymore?
No, just like nobody has like just crap food anymore. Everyone is like free range local. Everything is barrier free.
Barrier free kennels? Free. Or not kennels.
But barrier free boarding, yes.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of negative associations with the word kennel.
Yeah, like kennel cough.
Oh.
Kennel is like a small cage a dog can't get out of. Wants to bark in and sad. You conjure up like the Humane Society or something like that. Yeah,
I work quite a lot in veterinarian offices, and a lot of them have boarding facilities, and they look like dog jails
exactly,
for the most part.
Yeah, people like to see this big open area having fun, and this is like a dog vacation. But. See, basically what I said is the equivalent of free-range dining, local, whatever.
Hmm. What's your favorite kind of dog to work with?
All right, so this is going to sound stupid, but I kind of view them the same way I viewed, like, trading cards when I was young. Is like the really rare ones are the coolest, you know, like, cause you'll get a lot, you know, every day you got 10 labs, 10 goldens, 10 pit bulls. You get a few huskies, maybe more uncommon, but every once in a while you'll get like a razorback or a couple Great Danes, a little more Burmese Mountain Dogs. I would say of those, probably Burmese Mountain Dog. I like their size. I like their fur. I think it's all pretty superficial. I don't really know too much about their personalities. Huskies were my favorite until I learned their personalities. Very hard-headed. They're very pack oriented, I guess. That's why they're like good sled dogs. They work together with one leader who has an iron fist and saying mush, mush, mush. They don't respond to the, hey, come over here. You know, that kind of stuff. Whereas a lab golden retrievers are a little bit more respondent to normal human. I don't know. This is just my personal experience with just being around dogs. This is not professional. I don't read about it. I basically watch weird documentaries about dog psychology. That's like way more interesting to me.
Like the Dog Whisperer?
Well, that's pretty corny, but I don't know if I believe in that. But there's like, there's one on Netflix currently called The Secret Life of Dogs. And it's just like little things like dogs can't understand connectivity. And that's why they wrap themselves around trees. It's just like outside of their intelligence scope, I guess. Which seem just little things that seem interesting to me. Whereas like learning about, well, this breed is double coated. This breed is, that is a little bit more boring to me. The actual technical things that would probably help you in the job are a little bit more.
What is double coated?
Double coated is actually kind of hard to understand. It's like a husky molts. You know what that is? Like their skin or their when not their skin.
Summertime.
Yeah. So they have like a lot of their extra coat. So if you shave a dog down, that's like their undercoating, which is kind of like smaller hairs. It's more of like closer to their body, where then they have like the extra fur on top of that. Yes, all practical knowledge that you would use if you were working with dogs. Not as interesting as the connectivity thing, you know, like or the how they can smell cancer and the, like things like that.
I've become more interested in dogs recently.
Why?
I've been doing stand-up bits at Dog Story Theater. Only dog material.
Just like, what do you mean? Like, just about dogs.
Jokes about dogs.
I swear they kill. You can.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody likes dogs. Almost everybody. Last week I had a poem about a dog. Like a comedic kind of poem.
Mm-hmm.
About Blue the dog.
It's like a character that you created through the poem.
Yeah, I'm working on it. Well, okay. I know a dog named Blue, so it was inspired by his name, but. And it's also a play on, like, blowing dogs.
okay. All right. This is raunchy.
There's, if you read it into it with a dirty mind, then there might be some innuendo that it's blue humor, which I found appropriate because of the.
Okay. Yes, there's three levels here. I like this.
It's like an onion.
But you said you were doing stand up, so you just did that just one like, thing about it, or do you have like did you have bits about it? Did you do other things based on dogs?
Just jokes, dog based jokes.
I want to hear.
Just very short transitions between actual performing groups.
Okay.
Like 90 seconds maybe.
If you don't mind telling me one, I would love to
hear
one.
Yeah, let me. Last week I did the poem and then. Have you heard about Elon Musk's new interplanetary baked good delivery service staffed entirely by dogs? It's called Bread Rocket.
That's pretty good. I like it.
Sneak peek on this coming Monday. I'm going to be doing Chris Dogsworthy. Which is going to be, you might be a dog. So like,
I like where this is going.
Let's see. If you got a pile of old bones in your front yard, you might be a dog. If you have an owner that puts you on a leash and takes you for walks, you might be a dog. if you have a small group of friends that you're most loyal to, you might be a dog. If you like to lick strangers, you might be a dog. If you fart and don't acknowledge it, you might be a dog. If you chase after impossible dreams without a clue of what you'd do if you caught them, you might be a dog.
I like that one.
If you're either too dumb or too optimistic to know when someone wants to be left alone, you might be a dog. There's a lot of them.
Yeah. There's got to be one about humping your sister, is there?
Oh, there will be now. Nah, I try to keep it.
You try to keep it a little. If you do it in the Jeff Foxworthy voice, then if you hump your sister, you might be a dog.
Oh, I'm going to have to work on my Foxworthy.
You got it.
I'll probably just do a handful of those every week to split it between just like the regular dog jokes. So it'll be a recurring character.
I really like this stand-up character who only does dog bits.
Yeah, I kind of want to do like a fake documentary about Blue the dog, where Blue the dog is a stand-up comedian who is a dog, but he only pretty much only does dog stuff, dog jokes.
It's all Blue materials too.
Yeah, we'll see. So getting into the interview portion, what is your favorite color?
I don't know. I guess this is going to sound, I guess it's not really even a color, but the color I wear most is black. And this is going to, I don't like the way that that sounds. I don't like the connotation that it has. But if I'm being honest with you.
Black isn't a color?
People say that it's a shade.
Huh.
Like white. Because any color, if you add, because... I don't know.
50 Shades of Gray.
Yes. But you know, like in the computer, when you're doing the gradient scale, it's like all the colors, but then the black and white is a different thing on the side.
Huh.
Because that's the shading of it. You know, you have a blue and the blue gets darker and lighter if you mix it with black or white paint. But eventually, if you mix enough black paint, it just becomes black.
Hmm.
But that doesn't happen with the other colors. Well, all right.
I always picture it as like a circle with like the rainbow being the radius.
Yeah.
And then the very middle is white and the very outside is black. And then it goes like from black gradiented.
Oh yeah. But still the left to right is the black or the white or black.
Yeah.
That got way too complex for that question.
So black. if you had to be transformed into an animal, which type of animal would you choose to be?
Certainly panda. Thought about this a lot.
Like the red panda or the black and white one?
Black and white panda. Classic panda. Mm. Yes, I'm a classic man. Even before all like the cute videos of them and stuff, just they just seem like leisurely types. That's kind of what I am.
Are you vegetarian?
No.
Are they vegetarian?
I think they like bamboo.
They're bears.
Yeah. Don't some bears just eat like berries and stuff?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure they just eat bamboo.
It's a question for the ages. Or David Attenborough. He's probably got that figured out. I've been watching BBC's Planet Earth 2.
Oh, the second one. Yeah, I haven't started it. Yeah. I am a big Attenborough fan, though. He does a lot of stuff. Have you seen Human Planet, though?
Yes, I've seen all.
Yes, that's amazing. It's so good. Yeah, so amazing.
So good. Human Planet. Frozen Planet is really cool.
Yeah.
Kind of sad with the... A lot of those are global warming
stuff. Yeah.
And just, like, babies getting eaten.
Yes, just the cruelty of nature. Yeah.
Yeah. But... incredibly stimulating, I guess. The whole
they all are. Yeah. BBC knows how to make a goddamn television show, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, the cinematography, the camera work is just so well done.
I would say Human Planet is better than Planet Earth.
Yeah.
As far as just like I mean, Planet Earth is good. It's a lot. It's like rare footage, but it's ultimately just a nature documentary. It's like, oh, it's a bunch of elk running around. But Human Planet, that's some stuff you didn't even think existed. Like those guys who just run up on lions and scare them away from their kill, all based on how confidently they walk. And then they just cut off a huge boar leg and then they bring it back. And that's how they fucking survive. Is scaring lions by just puffing your chest out and walking like you mean it.
Even though the lion would wreck you in
exactly.
Half a second.
And it comes back within 30 seconds, and those dudes are so scared, and they got to do it super quick before the lion figures out, oh, that was a bluff. That's super interesting. There's nothing like that in Planet Earth. The one episode that I do keep going back to in Planet Earth is the bioluminescence one. Ooh. In deep. Under like the Which what are they called the deep sea covered? I think is the name of the episode. But it's all just where the sun doesn't reach the ocean.
Nobody's ever seen it before.
Exactly, it's super interesting stuff.
What is your earliest memory of experiencing comedy?
My earliest memory would be pretty young. Staying up to watch like Leno and Letterman, and then a few years later maybe Conan. Mostly all late night talk show based, and it's because my dad was pretty into it, and so I thought it was cool to like stay up late and watch that stuff with him. And my monologues were always my favorite, and then my dad had like certain favorite guests, which like became my favorite guests because that's what he would flip between the two of them, or just like, you know, sometimes watch something else. But basically on Friday nights, I would stay up, you know, when I was super, you know, 6-7 years old, would be like stay up late with them on Friday nights and watch The Late Show. And I remember, always remember the monologue. That was probably the part that I was awake during. And really always stuck with me. And then especially once I got older, that became like a thing. Once I was maybe like 11, 12, 13. That was like me and my dad would watch Conan together, and we liked his monologues and the goofy bits he would do in between. And then, you know, when Rickles would show up on any of them, that was always like the beginning thing. My dad would always be like, oh, don't tell your mom that you can watch Don Rickles. I remember he said something about letting out the one-eyed giant. And I was like, what does that mean? Had no idea. I just like thought he was just a dirty old man who like swore, but I'd certainly remembered one-eyed giant, and I was like, oh, like later it pieced it together.
That'd be a good band name.
One-eyed giant. Yeah. Letting out the one-eyed giant. It was something about when he goes to Vegas, he lets him out to look.
Wow. Yeah. That would be controversial.
Yeah. And it was certainly don't tell your mom about that. That's why he didn't want me to tell my mom about it. Mom still hates Don Rickles. My dad still loves Don Rickles. We've had this conversation not even a month ago.
How did you first get involved in performing comedy?
I don't know if I ever really had the notion to do comedy until I started hanging out with Jordan Shaver more, the host of Tip Top. Tuesday comedy, 9 p.m. It's a shameless plug because I'm there every week. But I didn't think about that really until we both started getting... It was a mutual interest of both of ours. And through just like sharing... His girlfriend was my roommate at the time. He started staying there a bunch and then eventually moved in. I moved out, but we stayed in good contact. Sorry about my voice, but we stayed in good contact and just sharing specials together. What we do and do not like about specifically stand up, you know, not anything, you know, like comedic acting or improv or anything. Like we both had a serious love for stand up and just things that we would bounce bit ideas off of each other, just trying to make each other laugh. And then we decided to start doing it through going to Tip Top Tuesday Comedy, which he now hosts. That was the first place we ever did a show, which is a pretty big feat by Jordan to like start in less than 3 years, and just under 2 years, I think, started to host the show that he first performed at. And now we do way goofy shit. We had a wrestling feud and all that different stuff. We've done videos and whatnot. But still the primary, like, we still do that where we compare what we think about stand-up specials, what we like about them, and getting into like this insane detail about them. Most recently, the Norm MacDonald special. I don't know if you've watched this. If you haven't, Netflix? Yes. Hitler's Dog is the name of the special.
When did that come out?
Not too long ago, maybe a month or two ago.
Huh.
We've had a big year for stand-up specials, but this is the best one by far. We've had Bill Burr, Louis C.K., but I would argue anyone that this is the best one of the year, for sure.
Hmm.
I think about it at least twice a day, and I've watched it 3 times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I might have to rewatch that. I don't remember it super clearly.
Yeah. There's a line where he's talking about his dog, and he says, "I don't got time for this dog stuff. I got to type into my magic phone." And that line goes through my head constantly. And at work, "I don't got time for this dog stuff. I got to type into my magic phone." It's a part of a longer bit. If you know what, people who have heard that are probably laughing right now, but.
He has a podcast, or like a live video cast. I don't know if he still calls it a podcast.
I don't know about this.
It's on YouTube. I just watched one the other day. He had Letterman on.
Letterman that's big. Doing... That's a huge guest.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It was interesting. Letterman has some more. He's had some time to get perspective on the whole decades.
He's post talk show. Probably has a beard.
Huge beard.
Yeah. that's great. But back to the beginnings of comedy.
Was Tip Top the first place you did it?
It was the first place I did it, but it wasn't the first place I signed up for.
Oh?
So I went to the Sunday Night Funnies. I don't know if you know what this is.
Yeah.
At the hotel, yes.
A couple times.
And when in my mind, so long ago, 2 years ago, when I was just a boy.
It was only 2 years ago?
It would have been 2015, yeah. So it would have been April 2015. I thought that the Sunday Night Funnies was like a big deal. And so because they had this like email blast letter, and I had signed up for it, and it was like way in advance, and they had these big crowds filled with, just general types of people who would turn on comics. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is the big time. And so Tip Top is a show that I had been going to watch, because also I left out that I watched comedy for like 3-4 months religiously before the comics started noticing me, like, what are you doing here? Like, what is your goal here? We know that you're gonna try it. Is that your plan? And so I got really nervous about this show at the Sunday Night Funnies that was coming up. I was a month away. And so I went and I was like, I got to do a show up, go up. And randomly, the Tip Top, which I rarely was show up, go up was. And then we both came and were probably like shitting our pants and did it. And seems crazy now. It seems like something that I wouldn't do again. It was the right circumstances of me and Jordan both being together, like fueling off of each other. And now I would imagine, get that fuel from just doing it, like continuing to do it. Now it seems crazy to stop. It seems crazier than it was to start would be to just stop doing it. Because it becomes very, like, almost, I guess probably a lot of people said this, like a drug or something. It's something that you certainly crave to do, especially shows that you like to do. When you do well, you feel good. You feel good about yourself. But it's because of the gamble that you could feel very bad about yourself for doing poorly. And so you start to really crave that. And that seems insane to me to just stop doing it. And also, I would have to explain to like everybody I know that I stopped doing it. They're like, oh, are you doing any shows? Well, actually, that seems like a lot of effort.
Hmm. It's easier just to go with the flow.
Just, yeah, and it's not nearly as daunting as it was when I first started of like, you know, oh my God, I can't deal with this. Now it's just, you know, if you were like, hey, let's go do a spot in a half an hour, I'd be like, yeah, let's do it, you know. But 2 years ago, you know, that would have been insane to me.
Well, let's talk about working in a porn store.
Oh, yes, yes.
You heard that right, people. Porn store.
Yes.
Was that the technical term?
No, adult, that is not the that is not the technical term at all. It is, yeah, adult novelty, I guess, was a one that you would use. The official title of the place that I worked at was Division Street Video and Toy. And so typically, and the old school term for it is bookstore. And then confusingly enough, arcade.
Arcade was...
Now, guess what arcade means.
Where you go play video games?
No.
A band that's really hot right now?
No. Peep Show.
An arcade?
Yeah.
Huh.
So you put in your little quarter and like the thing goes up and you see a naked girl. And so that would have been way back in the day. In the 80s, the nasty Times Square days. There was enough of a profit for that. Before, basically before internet porn and like live camming, that would be a thing. And maybe it still exists in bigger cities. It doesn't exist here. But it used to.
How much time do you get for a quarter?
That would all vary on what year this is. I don't know. I guess in the modern age, I don't know. It's got to still exist somewhere in New York City, the Peep Show. But then eventually it evolved into just like an arcade would be a place where you pay like a dollar and you get to just go in this porn room for like an hour. Mm. Typically it would be private booths. The place that I worked was just a, what they call a lounge. And so this is more typical of like a bathhouse. That's how it would be advertised. And but that's just like a gay jerking off room.
Huh.
So technically it's just like a room that's like really dark and it has like four or five TVs, largely men who are into... Well, it, not to say that you wouldn't be into women. A lot of them are. And a lot of them are into like trans porn and stuff like that. And trans women, trans men. Yeah, just a lot of fetishes. And then like the, what do they call it? Voyeurism. You know, masturbating in front of somebody, even if you're not gay. Hmm. Or even if you're not into men, I should say. Yeah, it's a hard pill to swallow. It seems so insane.
That happens in like a legitimate business front, basically.
Legitimate is
legalized. And
you know, I think it might. I've been I sometimes drive by it and like go by it, and I always try to look to see if the open sign's on or like any signs of life, because it's hard to tell if it's actually open. Because sometimes I would forget to turn the open sign on, but it hasn't really been. I feel like more times than not, it hasn't been out there. And they were going through some like fire inspection stuff when I left that seemed to be maybe fatal.
Ooh.
Fatal to the business.
Well, both probably.
Exactly. Yes. The fire hazards certainly were fatal. And, yeah, it's really the last of a dying breed again, because of internet porn. That's the thing that everyone brings up is like, well, why would you? And there's just, that's another thing is there's a lot of people who are older. Like, that's the way you came up and in your perverted ways. And that's what you like to do. And there's the last place to do it. Actually, it's not the last gay bathhouse. If you're looking for a bathhouse, the Diplomat right across the street is a little more exclusive. But that's a little bit more well-controlled. This place was like general riffraff for $10 a day. And so you get like a lot of like homeless people or... sneaky prostitutes, I guess, is what you'd say. So if you're like a known prostitute, you would not even come in there, or I would know that you're like, hey, get out of here. Like, you're not, you can't do that here. Because that is obviously a huge no-no. But sometimes people would like, you know, come in under false pretenses, I guess. they're maybe just getting into the prostitute game. And that's a large reason why I got out of this. I got into it. I guess I didn't think it was just for the stories. I guess it maybe was a little bit subconsciously, you know, but I stayed there for like a year. So like that's a little bit on me that it was available and I got money from doing it. So that's was a big thing when getting the job is like, I don't think I would be that grossed out by it and I can get paid for it. It seems easy. I'll do it. It's something I'm 100% can do if I want to, you know, and I was looking for work.
It wasn't boring.
Exactly. It wasn't boring. Yes. And that's what I thought. So a little bit, I thought I was getting stories, but I think mostly it was for stories. I guess towards the end, it was just out of ease.
You were a cashier?
Yeah. But there's only like one person who works there. So I guess I was the bouncer if I needed to bounce people, which never really happened. I've heard way worse horror stories working there than I ever dealt with. The girl who got me the job was a girl and, you know, dealt with a little bit more. Not really from the lounge people, because they knew it was the only place. And so they were a lot of times on their best behavior because they knew you could get kicked out for at any moment for any reason. And so they're like, I don't want that to happen to me because I like this place. And so the general street people, I mean, it's on Burton and Division, for if people don't know that area, it's it really is a lot of prostitutes and drug dealing. Like I saw it with my own eyes. It's not really stereotyping. I see it like so much that it becomes like you just go back to looking at your phone. And because I grew up hearing that, Division is where the prostitutes and drug, like that certainly really is. The police like certainly know past, that. If you were in that area, you just know, because like that's what I meant about like known prostitutes. Like there are definitely known prostitutes. Like I would see this person and be like, "That's Sharnasa. Like she's like a known prostitute."
Who knew?
Yeah, it's a sad thing, and that's why I had to get out of it. Now I work. The line is, I used to work with terrible devils. Now I work with little baby angels. And I had to go to the exact opposite, which is just working with dogs, I guess. There could be nothing more pure of heart.
Yeah. You rarely meet a mean-spirited dog.
Yeah, you're right. Unless somebody did something mean-spirited to that dog. Yeah. It's almost always the case. Moment of silence after that.
What questions do people typically ask you about working in an adult novelty establishment?
I guess they usually try to get a feel for what type of porn store it is. You know, like they ask me, so what kind of toys do you sell? And that leads into the whole thing that I just told you. And then they don't know what the hell to say. Because we don't really sell that many toys. I think it became, and then pretty frequently would be like, who cleans up? Yeah. I would clean up. I guess like, I frequently got
mop,
told,
right?
Yeah, just a mop. It's not really that bad. And I did get in trouble a lot for not being that clean.
How thorough are you going to be?
How thorough are you going to be?
Have you ever done improv or sketch comedy?
No, never. Never in a live performance. I guess if you consider like acting in a video would be a sketch, I would say that. Yeah. But never live improv. No. So I've done stamprov.
What's that?
Improvised stand-up, I guess.
Oh.
Where they just give you like a topic and then you do stand-up on it. I'm not good at it. Yet. And I cheat. definitely cheat.
How?
Like if they do like a topic that I can like somehow weasel my way into something that I've already wrote a joke about, then I do that. Well, always will do that. I cannot, like, you know, whatever. I can't remember a specific topic, but there was one where I definitely, while I was saying it, I was like, you're a piece of shit for this one. I feel like they could tell that it was like, he wrote that. That he didn't just come up with that.
Hmm.
They probably, they laughed, so maybe they didn't, but in my head, everybody knew. You're a fucking fraud.
Is that something that you do at Tip Top or?
Actually, yes. That was under a different host. That was under Steve Pierce, who did it to like spicing up the show, I think, like one time, and it turned out very bad. I think he personally got upset about it somehow. Oh, I think because a lot of people use their improv time to just bash him,
which is
an easy thing to do. I mean, especially because most of the people that were on the show, their only other experience with like writing jokes like day of or like that would be like roasting. Like we do like the roast stuff. If someone's leaving, you do a roast. Someone's birthday, you do a roast. And so you write jokes about them. And so that's like an easy thing for you to come up with off the top of your head when you're just trying to fill time is like, look at that bald piece of shit, you know, and just make fun of him. That's an easy target. And then also like make fun of whatever the people that he chose to. And he just took it to heart, which he normally doesn't, I think.
It sounds like he pushed people a little out of their comfort zones and got some backlash for it.
I didn't think that it was really that intense. I hope Steve listens to this, and I'll tell you, Steve, it was what the things that people were saying about you that night were not that crazy. I thought it was all in good fun because I think I probably said something about him too. I think it just turned a little more roasty than improv-y, which is gonna happen. But I did another one at Crunchy's, which was a little more organized, I guess. It was a regular thing, you know. It wasn't just a one-off. And they had like a projector up that had like a bunch of different topics and like a dude picking them and stuff, and he'd pick them like, you know, so everybody could see what the topic was up top, and then it was like, oh, looking back at it, whereas, you know, it was like a less professional. It wasn't like me reading the cards. Oh, the topic is blah, blah, blah. It just seemed more well thought out. And then there was also people there who like seemed to do it more. You never heard of Stan Prof before?
I don't think I've ever seen that, but it sounds very interesting.
It's usually bad. Stand-up is better when it's written, I think.
Huh.
I can see... So there's certain people who do things where they like host together. Like there's Max and Lansing where they host together. And that kind of starts to get like an improv-y feel because they like joke off each other. And it seems to be more free form. But still ultimately, I guess it's more stand-up. You would consider it stand-up.
For watching, do you prefer improv, stand-up, or sketch comedy?
Definitely stand-up. Always stand-up.
Do you prefer live or like the pre-recorded, edited
live for television? Yeah, live is always the best. There's something just different about being in a room full of people laughing. Specials are always great. Recorded, edited stuff is always great, but live stand-up, there's just something very maybe visceral is the right word, something very like in the moment.
It's very authentic too.
Exactly.
It's not a laugh track or
exactly and like, laughter is certainly contagious. You can feel it around you, like a positive feeling of when a stand-up is really crushing and everybody's listening to what they're saying. It's just everybody is being, you know, everybody's following this one person. It's a very like cult of personality too, I guess, especially live. You're in a room full of people who all want to hear what this one guy has to say. And in the most innocent way possible, you know, because obviously when you think of that, you think of like a very like Hitler and things like that, you know. Yes, and so stand-up is like the most innocent form of like that same group mentality where like we all really like this guy and we think he's really funny and we're all imagining what he's saying and we like his opinion and all that stuff. And then you, in a way, I guess you kind of suspend your disbelief that it is all written, maybe because it's like a magic trick. You don't exactly understand how he did write all that. And especially before I started doing stand-up, it just like, how? And that's, I think, maybe what I like a lot about the Norm Macdonald special is I don't really understand how he's doing it. Like, if I said all those things on stage, people would think I'm very stupid. It's very dry. I guess maybe you would say they're anti-jokes. I don't know if that really does it justice. That conjures up a bad term, a bad image for me. But yes, it's certainly not a cadence I could ever pull off.
So it's mostly his delivery, you think?
I guess if you could boil it down, delivery is definitely a part of it, but I think it's a, just a general, what I like to call a jib, you know, the cut of someone's jib. You ever heard that term?
I've heard of it. I don't know what a jib is, though.
Well, a jib is like, technically it means like the cut of your clothes, but it also, it just means I like your look. I like just everything about you. I like the cut of your jib, you know? And so you got a good jib. That just means I like the way, I like the way that the person speaks. I like the words that they choose to use and the pacing of it. So that is the delivery, but then also the general emotion that you're giving when you're saying it. Maybe you sound a little bit bored, or some other people sound like angry, or other things like that. But that's all a part of your jib. And I think I just like the cut of his jib.
You a fan of Dirty Work?
What do you mean Dirty Work?
His film.
Oh,
Chris Farley. And
I've never seen it, but I know what you're talking about. No. I'm not a huge fan of like those types of movies. Like
Adolescent.
Yeah, like the Adam Sandler films. Type stuff. Yeah. I've seen a few of them, but even when I was young, I was not super into them.
If you like Norm as a comedian, that was
yes,
a good one to see. What are some of your all-time favorite comedic movies?
All-time favorite comedic movies. I wasn't prepared for such questioning. I guess as far as like things that I've enjoyed all time, I would have to say Half Baked, is like stupid as that sounds.
No, it's a perfect movie.
Yeah.
It's like 80 minutes long.
Yeah.
It's got comedy. It's got romance. It's
And every time you watch it, you forget about something in it. You're like, oh, that was pretty funny. I guess I'm a huge Dave Chappelle fan. Always have that. But I don't know. That seems like not the right answer for that question. There's got to be a better answer.
I think that's a good one.
If I think of it later, I'll tell you.
All right. What are some of your all-time favorite TV shows?
All-time favorite TV shows. Really, to be honest, and to also counteract Nolan, who was a previous guest on this show, Nolan Graff, winner of Funniest Person in Grand Rapids, which I'm probably going to demand a recount soon.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. But
maybe someone will leak his emails.
I think there was some bribery going on there, for sure. There was some dirty business.
You heard it here first?
Yeah. But he said that he does not like Seinfeld. I would say one of my favorite comedic shows all the time, Seinfeld. And then natural progression from that is a Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh man, looking forward to the new season.
Yes, absolutely.
October, November,
somewhere around there, somewhere in the fall, I think. Yeah. I believe you're right. What else? Louis, obviously great.
Oh man.
What else? As far as like newer shows that I've enjoyed recently, Crashing with Pete Holmes was really good.
Yeah. You ever listened to his podcast? You Made It Weird.
Yes. And then he had a short-lived TV show, which is, what was it called?
The Pete Holmes Show?
Yeah, I think so. It was like a loose format talk show. Like not like I don't know, it was just like two guys sitting in a chair and kind of like, I think it was kind of like Last Call with Carson Daly. Maybe it came on like after The Late Show or something like that. But yeah, I've always really enjoyed his stand up too. He has a great dog bit. I'll tell you the summarized version that he grew up with cats. And when you hold a cat, you cradle a cat, you can just when you're done holding the cat, you can just throw your arms out and be done with the cat, and the cat will like land on the ground. It's no big deal for the cat. You just drop it and you hold your hands out. Now I'm doing something else. And so he was holding a small dog and talking to his friend and just not his, his friend's dog holding it and just did that. And I'm like, why did you just drop our dog? And so that's a great bit about an honest mistake.
Yeah. Oops. What streaming shows are you currently watching?
Streaming shows. What does that mean?
Netflix, YouTube, Hulu, Amazon Prime.
Yeah. Anything. I was hoping that you didn't mean like live streaming YouTube video game channels or something like that.
That too.
That is huge with the kids. Every parent I talk to, that is what their kids watch is live stream YouTube.
Yeah.
Of just video game stuff.
Or Twitch TV.
Exactly. Yeah. Stuff like that. Or I guess not even live, but just of that person who's doing just,
Yep.
That Markiplier.
Markiplier is huge.
He does, I think he does like theaters. He tours theaters.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I think he just has like projection. He just does like the thing that he does.
Yeah.
It's insanity to me. But that's, that's what the kids want. I'm not entitled to understand it.
I streamed on Twitch for a year. Tried it out for a year.
Do video games?
Yep.
What games?
Oh, a ton of different games. A lot of Minecraft.
Okay. So you're trying to cash in on this Markiplier money. This
no, game. I haven't played video games in years, and I love video games.
Oh, yeah.
I played a ton of puzzle games. I played Skyrim like every Sunday for a few months, which is an incredible game. I don't know if you ever do like D&D.
No, never done D&D, no.
I'm just getting more into that, but it's a very similar structure, but more of a narrative. Well, D&D can be a narrative too, I guess, but a more of a structured narrative.
Yeah, okay.
So the whole world has just got a ton of lore and like
it's been going history on for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Have you played the other Elder Scroll games?
That was my first one. So I wasn't really sure what I was getting into. And then that ate dozens and dozens of hours because there's so much to do and so much of the world to explore and learn about all the history of the Tamriel and everything that's going on.
Yes, there's a lot going on in that world.
Yeah. Incredible game series.
Yeah, and so that's how, I can definitely see it's more structured than a game of D&D. But a game of D&D does have structure. I've always wanted to play, never really had, you need a crew of people who are very motivated.
Committed to showing up every week.
Yep. I can hardly get a game of Monopoly going. I'm a big Monopoly fan, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you like the variants or only
classic? Classic. No. None of those.
Do you play with the actual rules or do you do like the free parking?
If people want to do it, I don't care. They can do it. I probably already did a lot of convincing to get them to play.
Yeah.
And I'm going to wreck them and I'm not going to be nice about it. So whatever, you can do that thing. I've like watched videos of the World Series of Monopoly, which is...
It's a thing?
Hardly. but these people are really good at it. They like are constantly doing like trades without like even speaking because they know what like the most logical trade is for each other and like what the risk and things are going on. So they just like hold out one card and they already know like the guy, that's what you're asking for.
Huh.
Fun fact, orange property is the best property to get in Monopoly. By far the most profitable. Boardwalk is, I don't know. That's a pretty risky strategy to try to put all your money. It takes so much money to build that up, and it's such a low chance. And where that is on the board makes the most sense, because the most rolled landing in Monopoly is, I believe, Illinois Avenue. One of the red properties. It's the last red property. And that, just by sheer dice probability, is the most landed on spot.
The last.
The red, last of the red properties.
14 spaces from Go, which would, since it, the most commonly rolled numbers is 7.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And so if you get 2 7s, yeah. And so it's all based on 7s, yeah. And so, but it's not the best properties to own because of pricing. Because once you get around that corner, costs more. Yeah. So yellow and green are basically the trash properties. You really wouldn't want those at all. In my opinion, I guess people would argue that maybe the brown ones are better. How did this get going?
It's a great game.
It is. It was originally called Landlord, and it was created by a socialist teacher to teach the evils of land ownership, of land monopolies. Yeah. Because it makes you, because when you're playing Monopoly and you're really raking it in and you want to cut your friend's deals and you're like, I'm sorry. Like, mm-hmm. It was supposed to make people feel bad about it, but like sociopaths like me just like revel in the power.
Yay, capitalism.
Exactly. It was like, look what I did. I planned this from the start and it turned out better for me.
Yeah. If you have the best information, then.
Exactly, but still, but then when you lose, oh man, you got a lot of people really, really let you have it, because you can the dice can always make you lose.
Yep, it's a good combination of skill and randomness.
It is, absolutely is.
Yeah, I love board games.
Yeah,
you play other board games or?
I've played this game. I believe it's called. Jesus, I want to say it's called Pandemic, but I think that's wrong.
Pandemic, where you're trying to eliminate
the
color virus cubes.
The cooperative board game?
Yeah.
Yeah, super fun. Super fun.
It's a really good one.
I have played Agricola. It's kind of like Settlers of Catan. It's kind of like a basic farming resource supply type deal. Try to build up the best thing. I don't know. Kind of boring and kind of complicated. Pandemic is way better. What else? Risk. I guess Risk is pretty fun. Classic game.
Yeah. World domination.
Yes. Yes.
So capitalism and world domination.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to go. If you couldn't tell by my long hair and my cut off jean shorts, I'm all about capitalism.
Who are some of your all-time favorite comedians?
All-time favorites. Favorites are hard for me, as you can tell from the last question. I always feel like there's going to be a better answer.
You want another beer?
I do, yeah, that'd be great. Favorite comedians, though, would be Louis C.K. would be my most influential. I think he's the most poignant comedian of our generation, but as far as just laughs per minute, Bill Burr is definitely my top. I think he's definitely my top guy right now. Bill Burr is definitely, because I also find comedy to be very relevant, I guess. I can appreciate George Carlin and Richard Pryor for where they were and what they were doing, but like I think it's one in Maria Bamford's new special. She makes jokes about how his nobody ever talks about his classic jokes on the difference between beating a white woman and beating a black woman, you know, like certain things about him. Like, obviously that's like a very cut and dry example of things that were okay. Like, there's the Eddie Murphy has a track on his on Raw just called Faggot, and then he has another one on the next one, I think it's called Faggots Revisited. So the comedy climate changes, and so these are so I'm saying the, like the offensive terms change, but also just what is funny changes.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate those classic comedians, but I would say I really, as far as my enjoyment, I get them out of contemporary like working comedians. Like Louis C.K. is obviously at the top. I think Bill Burr is now the higher top for me. Even before he came to Grand Rapids and hung out at Dr. Grin's, as I'm sure everybody knows about, but was always like, I feel like, as far as just like really, really making me laugh, consistently, Bill Burr is at the top, making me think and like quote bits to other people. Definitely Louis. It's like, oh, this is like that Louis bit. And then, you know, ah, that's funny. But Bill is just, he's a performer. He's an entertainer. It's a jib, back to that. He's just got a good jib. That Boston, the accent, the hair, the way he talks, the volume he talks, the pacing, all of it.
Let's talk about Tip Top Deluxe.
Yes. You came, what was it, 2 weeks ago?
Last Tuesday, I think. Last week Tuesday?
Yeah, last week Tuesday. So that would have been a week and a half ago or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tip Top Tuesday has been going on for quite a long time, longer than I've been doing comedy. As you said, the first place that I've done comedy. My favorite place to do comedy. That is the only place that I'll try new bits. I guess I'll try them elsewhere if I feel like 110% confident in a bit. But that's typically where I try to do new stuff. And I feel like that place really pushes me to try to do new stuff, because there's always new people there, and you should always be playing to those people, those new people. But you're never going to get as good of a response as if you get the whole room laughing. And so I try my best to play to not the back of the room and not the front of the room, but to just everybody. And so I think I can take this new material, because I think it's funny, and I think I can make it funny to comics and non-comics, because that's always going to be a thing with an open mic or like a showcase show like that, is that like a large majority of your audience is going to be comics. And so it's hard not to just play to them with just like obscene shit or inside jokes. Inside jokes are always going to be easy. Yeah. That's going to get the boys going. But I think that place really pushes me to try to successfully do new material every week, or recycle things that I maybe told once or twice before. Cause I also meticulously record every set that I do, which is maybe like a madman thing to do. I don't know. But I think it really helps with your growth and your memory. That's like my memory log. If that shit got deleted, I would be lost. I would have no idea what to do. Because I would feel like all of that work that I put in on writing new stuff is just gone now. So I can always go back. And actually, the night that you saw me was a night that I just went back through a bunch of old stuff and stuff that maybe had gone okay at one point, and I decided to shelve it for one reason or another. And you just try it with this new sense, like a fresher sense. Like, I had an idea of where I was going with that and like the general punchline, but I'm going to really try to sell this better, or just do this in a better way. I think I understand this idea a little bit better now. And that's always the place to just really work out stuff. And then, so when I go elsewhere where people are going to pay me money to do it, or it's going to promise me future work or something like that, something that I feel like is maybe a bigger deal, then I have like these tried and true things that I know this works, because I've done this many times here before. You know, I did it and then did it again a couple months later, or I just kept doing it and got a really solid response from these people at Tip Top. And so now I can bring it somewhere else.
Do you tour much?
Tour, no.
Travel
around Michigan. At the level I'm at right now, it's not really worth it to go farther. I've been offered a few times to go farther, but it's just not financially smart, I guess. And for like what you would be getting out of the show, even like, because sometimes you're like, oh, well, I'll just do it for gas money or whatever. But like, I'm going to go do, some small guest spot for like $10 in Chicago or something. It's not worth it. Nobody's going to remember who you are. And you're going to spend $200 getting there and, or, you know, a hotel, who knows what. So yeah, I guess there's one-nighters all over Michigan, especially like people say comedy is not great in the summer, but there's a lot of like vacation towns you can do comedy in. Mm. Like I've gone around to like South Haven and Pentwater and Spring Lake and all these, you know, every town like that up and down the coast has a comedy show. I mean, they're obviously not the most glamorous things in the world, but some of them aren't bad. They're a good place to definitely cut your teeth in front of a general audience, you know, because Tip Top is, again, is like very, it's very safe. You know, it's like people, like-minded individuals, I guess, you know, young people who are going to understand my references and things like that. And so then you bring it out into the real world of just general public, you know, and that's where you get that is in the, and Dr. Grins is like that. Dr. Grins is the general public. You can't say like, oh, it's all young people here, or it's all like this type of people here. It's just kind of a good mix of people. And so that's a good place to learn, because a club is always going to be mixed people. So you go to these like little hotels and all this different stuff, big bars that have decent setups of, you know, 50, 60 seaters. And then you can do better in the clubs because it's like a club type audience. Hmm.
Let's talk about the stand-up scene in Grand Rapids and how you've seen it changing.
I don't know. Some people would say right now it's doing really bad. This is a thing that this is a source of much drama that you're probably not involved in. It's just people saying it's bad, or people from not here saying it's bad, which I think is, it stings a little bit more. Hmm. People from like the neighboring community, you know, said we play over other places, you know, go out and do shows other places, you know, like the Lansing, Kalamazoo, and then even like some people in Indiana, Detroit, Chicago, and stuff like that. We know about each other's atmosphere, and feel like we've been really getting the guff lately, but I think it's good. I'm not really, I guess, a historian on it, but I feel like it always could be better. There's never something that couldn't be better. But maybe there's just not a, I guess there's really not a ton of working comics right now. I think that's maybe the gripe people have, or I really don't know. I guess maybe it's a lot of open micers. I don't know. Hmm. That might be the guff with it. But I personally, I think it's pretty good. There could be more shows. That is what's pretty seriously dropped off. But what's the solution? I'm not going to complain about it unless I know what the solution is. Like if I could say, oh, well, the problem is we need to be doing a show at this place and that'll make the scene better. Like I'm not just going to sit here and be like, oh, well, there's not enough shows. I was like, well, then just go do the shows that there are. And then, I don't know, I'm grateful to have an audience, I guess. I'm not trying to sound super humble, but I guess it is. Tip Top is good enough for me. It's a lot of people come to that for an open mic. And then Max, too. If you want to drive out to Max, that's the same thing. So a lot of people will be there. And even Sunday Night Funnies, when it was around, it wasn't the coolest room in the world, but there was a lot of people there. Thursday night, open mic at Grins. You show up, there's probably going to be at least three people who didn't show up for that spot. And you can go and you can get time there. Like, more times than not, when I show up on Thursday night at Dr. Grin's, I get a 3-minute spot in front of, which isn't long, but it's enough. You can get a lot of laughs in 3 minutes in front of a lot of people for something that you didn't even plan on doing that day. Hmm. And so there is opportunities if you're willing to work with it. It's obviously, it's not like a Chicago where you can go hit 4 or 5 mics a night, but you can do enough to become a better comedian here, I think, if you put in the work. I think that's a large part about it, is putting in the work, putting in the effort, I guess.
What is a joke to you?
What is a joke? Jesus, now we're getting real abstract. Well, I guess a joke in any, in the most basic sense is maybe something that you didn't expect. So I think almost everything is a misdirection joke if you really boil it down. Hmm. Even a rant is like, the reason why you thought that that line that they said was funny is because you didn't expect it. Like, as soon as you can predict it, that's when it's not funny. When people can call out your punchline or something, when they haven't heard it, you know, Mitch Hedberg's different. When people, everybody knew his stuff and people were calling it out, that's different. But if it's so obvious, I can't think of an example, but you know, you just like a, almost like a street joke where anybody is like, oh, he's going to say his dick. And you're like, oh, okay, he said his dick. And, that's what makes it not funny is that everybody expected it. And so I think the, being able to paint a scene, because you're also really like bringing someone with you, you're making them imagine something in their head, and then you say something that they don't expect you to say. That's where it becomes funny. Is once you create that setup of, I went to the store and then what happened, and that's the part that they didn't expect you to say, and that's the part that makes it humorous. But you build a lot on that. That's the most, I think, ape like primitive ha ha part of it. Just like a peekaboo makes a baby laugh, is because they didn't expect it. I think that's, yeah, that's probably as good as I can explain that. I do think about that quite a bit, though. It's hard. It's like Quicksilver, though. You'll never understand it. You'll never fully get a grasp on it.
Huh. Does a Cyclops wink or blink?
Blink. Because I think if you had that big of an eye, you could kind of do like a little bit more of your left going down than your right, you know?
Huh.
You'd probably have way more eyelid control.
Just because of its size?
Yeah.
I'd like to know more.
I don't know. We're going to have to ask, like, I don't know, some fiction writer, Tolkien? I don't know.
So you have some beef with Nolan Graff over his Grandcast episode? Is that...
Yeah, certainly. All right. First thing was, we already talked about that, the Seinfeld thing.
That's a big one.
Yeah. And I think he's doing it just like, it's just like a cool thing, you know, like, everybody else likes it, so I don't like it.
Just but then, contrarian.
Exactly. But then his go-to is How I Met Your Mother. Yeah. I could tell that you guys were sharing my opinion, but being polite. You were like, oh, okay, I guess How I Met Your Mother is okay.
The first few seasons were really good.
You liked it? Oh, yeah, you were the one. I think Josh was the one who wasn't into it. And Josh was more upset about the Smith sing, too, which was also to be contrarian. Yeah, you humored him a little bit. The first few seasons were good.
They were. Yeah. And then they didn't want to end the show in a logical way because it was so popular, and they wanted to just keep cranking them out. And they didn't have any plan or direction. I like shows that have a, like, they have the overall vision planned out ahead of time. Something like Breaking Bad.
Okay.
Where they know we're doing...
Yes, this is a story that has an end.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they know where it's going ahead of time.
But you could say the exact same thing happened in Seinfeld, where they didn't have an end. But yeah. Seinfeld is a, I think, factually better show.
Yeah. Me too.
It's hard to find someone who isn't a contrarian, Nolan Graff. The only way I'm going to be satisfied by the end of our rivalry... is if I win Funniest Person next year, but I also get paid more. The first year that they get, they upped it up to 2,000.
Oh, next year?
Next year. I'm hoping they up it to 2,000 because I definitely have to win. That's a given. Otherwise, this rivalry, he's going to completely squash me. I'm going to have no clout in all my trash talking.
Was this year your first year or second year doing Funniest Person?
This is my second year.
Nice.
First year... didn't go so great. Second year, I got to the semifinals. Third year, I'm taking it home, baby. It's a good, nice. Winning the gold. It's all just to prove Nolan wrong, I think. he's always been a big supporter of me in comedy ever since I started. He's been my friend. But as I've grown to know him more, I just want to be better than him. I don't know why.
Huh.
I hope he listens to this too. I'm going to send it to him personally and tell him that I talked about you and I want you to hear these things.
Hashtag Nolan Graf.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. Yeah, that's it. I'm just going to tag. I'm not even going to tag you in it when I post. I'm just going to tag Nolan.
If I remember, I will do that also.
What was another thing that he said? Oh, well, you asked him the question about if you could go back in time and tell yourself something when you're 16. He says, don't kill yourself. That's redundant. You didn't kill yourself.
Yeah.
That. Oh, I was filling dog bowls listening to that, just losing it.
What does it mean to be a comedian?
I don't know. I think it is something that you decide about yourself, I guess. You're the one who decides to tell people that you're a comedian. And so other people, I guess, could criticize you for it, but you can still call yourself that. You can still introduce yourself as that. Even if you're only doing like one show a year or like you're doing something weird. But in a more like serious sense, I guess a comedian to me is a person who makes their living doing comedy. What I call a working comedian. I guess you could be a working comedian and still have side jobs, but I don't know. I guess money. You don't want money to validate it. All this capitalism shit. I think maybe if you make it to a point where you can even MC or get a guest spot at a legitimate show, you, in my eyes, are a comedian, a bona fide comedian. Like if you get a guest spot at Dr. Grin's and whatever. Or you, more so if you get asked to host, I guess you can get a guest spot through some sort of trickery. But to host a weekend or something, or it's that you got to be asked to do it, basically.
What is your motivation for performing comedy?
I guess it's pretty selfish, but it's to feel good, to feel good about myself, to feel like I did something... Not that I did something positive, but I guess it inherently is something positive. Like everybody enjoys making someone laugh, and that feeling gets multiplied by the more people you do it, and you can always do it better. Every time, like I said, I recorded my sets. Every time I listen to it, I can always be like, "Well, it could always be this top level." There was that top level in the set. Well, why wasn't the rest of it like that? And so there's always a more. You always want to get more. But at the base of it, I think it is because it really just makes me feel good to have people laugh at what I say. There's really no more honest or answer than that, because that's really what it feels like when you get off stage. I'm in a better mood after I do. If you do bad, you're in a terrible mood. When I first, the first time I ever bombed, I had nightmares afterwards. I had this nightmare that I was walking up a sand hill and a bunch of snakes were biting me, like a dune hill, and a bunch of snakes were biting me. And then as soon as I got to the crest, like one bit me and I knew it was poisonous. And then I died in my dream and I woke up. And that I don't dream a lot and I don't have a lot of whatever. But that was like when I first started, that was the first time I ever did real, real bad and felt really terrible about what am I doing and why did I ever decide to do this? Like those people hated me and this is supposed to be fun. Like what? I didn't get paid for this and nobody liked it. And this probably means that I'm awful. And as it goes on, that gets easier. So you still kind of have those thoughts in the back of your head, but you're not having nightmares about it anymore.
What is the best gift that you have ever received?
So maybe like 10 or 12 years ago, my grandma, who is now had died since then. She died maybe 3 or 4 years ago. She got me, it's called the Pizzazz. And it's like a countertop kitchen appliance that has like a hot lamp and then like a little circle pizza thing that goes around in a circle, and then you put it on there. It's meant to cook like frozen pizza, but you can cook pretty much anything. Like you Great for reheating leftovers, anything. You know, you put it in the microwave, it's going to get all soggy and stuff.
Yeah.
You got the hot lamp, and it's hot from the bottom. Like, the electricity, like, heats the pan thing, too, so it cooks it from both sides. You don't got to flip it. Basically, just warms it up. It's like cooking it in the oven, but it goes really quick because it's electricity. And that's literally the best gift I've ever gotten. It outlasted the person who got it for me. And we were using it for, like, a good decade while she was still alive. And told her all the time, this is the greatest gift. Love it. And left it at my parents' house because I can't take it from there now. I will never take it from there. And it hasn't broke down either. It's at least like 13 years old now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice. What is the best gift that you have ever given?
Oh, best gifts I've ever given. I don't have a better... I'm really a piece of shit when it comes to giving gifts. The best gift I've ever given. I feel like the best one was it was kind of stupid. No, that's not the best. I'm not going to tell that one. These questions are too much for me. These should be simple questions, but they're not. The best one I got recently was I decided for Mother's Day, I always get disposable gifts. Like, it's always like a card and chocolate or something. So I wanted to get a real gift, and it's a card for my mom. Or it's a cup, a mug that says, I may be left-handed, but I'm always right. And I thought, and she's left-handed, so I thought that was good.
Are you left-handed?
No, I'm not. Both my parents are, though.
Huh.
Isn't that strange?
I'm left-handed.
There's got to be a better gift. Maybe that's why I've been unsuccessful in relationships. I'm just bad at getting gifts. I'm maybe not a very thoughtful person. Certainly not as thoughtful as my grandma was with the pizzazz.
She had a lot more time to practice.
And that gift had legs, boy. Let me tell you.
If you formed a band, what would the name of the band be?
I feel like I had a good one recently, but I forgot what it was. There was the One-Eyed Giant, which is a great one. A great name.
Lots of merch potential with
there. There really is, yeah. A lot of plays on words there. But I don't know. I was always like, I was in bands when I was younger, and I was always the guy who came up with the bands, the name that one. I was like, that's stupid. I can tell you bad band names that I was in. I was in a band called Religious SS Disorder, which really still doesn't make much sense to me.
The word religious, two-letter S's,
SS. And
the word disorder.
Disorder. So it's like a religious Nazi disorder, I guess. But I think originally it was called Religious Disorder, which I guess kind of makes sense. But the SS really threw me off. And I joined that because they asked me to join the band, and I was young, and I felt like that was like, why would you? They asked me to be in a band, so I should probably be in the band.
You yes-anded them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. and then... What was another band that was in? I was in a band called Crack Baby when I was like 15 or 16.
What, do you play instruments or sing or?
Play instruments, yeah. Play guitar. And then I kind of play piano and keyboard. Not as well as I play guitar. But I also haven't played instruments in a very long time. Before I started doing stand-up, too, there was like a long period where I have no desire to do that anymore, really. Sometimes, I guess, like, if there's a piano around, I'll diddle on it for a second. And I've played a guitar maybe here or there in, like, the last 6 or 7 years, but very, very rarely. But I can remember all the chords. And if you put one in front of me right now, I could run through every chord. And I could do probably a few scales. Like, I can still remember them. That shit's there forever. Like, my speed and my technique would be down. It would be a little sloppy, but I can still remember the structure, and, like, I can picture it right now thinking about it.
Yeah, it's like writing...
Writing a joke?
Riding a...
Oh, riding a bike. I thought you said riding a joke.
Oh.
But it is kind of like writing a joke. That becomes muscle memory too. Like what, if you've told it enough times, you can almost not change it because your brain just goes to that way. You're like, well, this is what you say after this.
Who are some of your role models?
Oh, role models. I guess my grandpa was a pretty big role model on me because he was like pretty quiet and communicated in like certain ways that were people always listened to him because he didn't talk a lot, and that always like inspired me. And then it was always like very cool to do things with him. Like I always enjoyed, you know, whatever he went fishing and stuff like that. And then I really enjoyed doing things with him because I just liked the cut of his jib and thought he was a cool guy because it was just my one particular grandpa. The other one, I mean, I liked my other grandpa, the grandpa on my dad's side, but for some reason, the one on my mom's side was just a bit more inspiring to me. I was more interested in what he was doing, I guess, and more about his life. And then more so when I got older, because my that grandpa died when I was pretty young. And then so when I was getting more into my like teenage years, there's my Uncle Jack, who's like a pretty big role model to me, probably in a negative way. He's like a big like drinker and cigarette smoker, but he was also just like always holding court and like playing his guitar, and you know, like people were always again like the center of attention, but on the completely opposite scale. Like my grandpa was like the picture of like a stoic Norman Rockwell, only speak when you have something to say type thing. And then my uncle was like a very like, you know, Bob Dylan-y type guy. But I thoroughly enjoyed him, and then I think probably inspired me to start smoking weed. I think I started smoking weed not long. I didn't smoke weed with my Uncle Jack until I got into my 20s. But I certainly, that was like the first time I kind of knew what that was. I was like, they went into this room and they came back and their eyes are all red. And it smells funny in here. And whenever they take out that tin can, they tell me to go see what my aunt's doing. So I kind of figured it out. And then many years later, we did smoke weed because he died recently too, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. But before he died, we did smoke weed together, I think twice. I went to go visit him, and it was nice.
What are some of your favorite restaurants in Grand Rapids, and what do you like to order there?
I'm weird with restaurants. I like to go there and order the exact same thing every time I go and sit in the same place, if at all possible. If not, it's not like the best the experience could be for me. My favorite places right now, because that also changes pretty frequently, are San Jose, Taqueria San Jose, on Division by the Salvation Army down there. Great tacos all around.
What kind of meat do you like to get?
Chicken.
Chicken?
Yes. I'm sure all the other stuff is great, but like what I told you, I always get the same thing.
Never tried the lengua?
Lengua? Was that the tongue? Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
I would try it, I guess.
It's way, way better than I thought it would be.
Really?
I was very apprehensive about trying it.
Yeah.
Eventually, I mustered up the courage, and it was delicious. Like, it was very tender. The texture wasn't weird, and just very flavorful.
God damn, that sounds really good. Yeah, I can imagine that would be good. I mean, if it wasn't good, people wouldn't be eating it, you know?
Right?
Yeah.
I still haven't been brave enough to try the cabeza, which is head or face meat.
Hey.
It's like the cheeks and...
Yeah, like the snout and stuff.
Maybe eyeball.
Yeah, that's too much for me. That's the part that you like use for fishing bait or something. You know what the Winchester,
I know
it's gross. You know what the Winchester, they do that. I went in there like I don't care for the Winchester, you know, it's a little too hoity toity for me, but, I'll go in there every once in a while And I went in there once, a little bit apprehensively, you know, just was wanting to meet with a friend. And then I look over and they're just eating a pig's head. The whole table's got a pig's head. Like we're in Viking times. It's like, have a little bit of class. But another good place to eat, I like that, is it the Curry Kitchen or the Palace of India? Yeah. Curry Kitchen. Up on Diamond. Yes. That one's pretty good. I like to get the lamb curry there. I like a lot of Indian food. That's a place where I go. Really the best Indian restaurant though is in Ann Arbor. It's called Earthen Jar. It's this like place that you just go in and it's like pretty much a house, I think, that they turned into a business, but it's like downtown Ann Arbor, like right in the downtown of all that stuff that goes on down there, you know, by the university and everything. But it's just a Indian buffet and you pay by weight.
Huh.
And anything you get, and it all costs the same. You just put it on the little thing at the end and it costs money. And it's like this Indian guy who runs it, and he legitimately only listens to Bob Marley and has like a he has like a large CD case, like, you know, like those wall CD cases that have a bunch of them, all just different Bob Marley CDs.
Wow.
Like live versions, collections, actual albums, all this different stuff. And he's a man of few words. And so he'll usually just say like 1064, and then you give him $10.64, and then you leave. You also expect, if you eat there, you're expected to wash your own dishes or at least put them in the sink.
Wow.
Which is like a kitchen sink.
Huh.
Yeah. It's very cool, especially for something right downtown, literally steps away from other super fancy cocktail bars and all the, you know, the downtown type stuff.
Huh.
Very cool place.
Yeah. If I ever make it back over to Ann Arbor.
Yeah. If you ever, you owe it to yourself to make a day of Ann Arbor, go to Pinball Pete's and Earthen Jar. That is it. I've been making that trip for a long time. Long time. I do it maybe once a year. That's the riches of the poor right there. You can get out there for like under $100. You can have a great day.
What is Pinball Pete's?
Pinball Pete's is like it's a chain. There's another one in Lansing, but it's just existed since the 70s, like this under, it's like a basement, and it's the original kind of arcade, not the porny arcade, just the one that you thought, the video game kind. Yeah, and they have everything from like classic video games to air hockey, ticket machines, that would be like Chuck E. Cheese, Dance Dance Revolution, pinball machines, anything you would really want to play if you were interested in an arcade. Very, very cool place to go. Reasonably priced too.
Nice.
Yeah.
Is it, you pay by game or for a lot, an allotment of time?
Classic style. Just
like tokens or quarters?
Quarters. Just most everything's about quarter to 50 cents. Some of the newer stuff, because they have very current stuff too. Like all the stuff that came out this year will be in the front, like the, because they make like two pinball machines a year, because there's like what, like Stern and one in Bali, I think, or maybe they're the same company, but I think they only make two a year. And so this year, I think it was that Batman and Robin one, and so they had that right up in front. It's like that classic style Batman and Robin. I think they have it at Pyramid Scheme, but then
like the 60s,
and then the year before that, two years before that, it was the Wizard of Oz one with the big plasma screen, which they also have at,
Pyramid Scheme is great for people.
Definitely they always have the newest one, because Walking Dead was also a new one, the Metallica one was new. Those are all like really new to the earth pinball machines.
You like pinball?
I do. I'm pretty good at it. I like to say that I'm pretty good at it. Can you catch the ball? You can catch the ball, do whatever you want.
Dead flip? No.
Yeah.
I'm not that skilled. It would be nice someday, maybe. But it's a very time-consuming game to learn. Like, you have to practice a lot.
I know.
But it's so good.
Yeah. The way I learned is lived with a guy who had a pinball machine.
Oh, all right. That's unlimited free practice.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that's how you learn how to catch the ball and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. First Sunday of every month is free pinball at.
That's a great place to just get on a machine that nobody knows how to play or nobody wants to play and just keep trying to. And obviously, it's a stupid thing to practice, but. Your friends will think you're cool if you do it.
It's great, yeah.
You're like, hey, check it out. Take a drink. Go out and smoke a cigarette. Here, hold this button.
Yeah, learning like the narrative of the table and all the different storylines and objectives.
Yeah,
and
that's very difficult. That can,
yeah.
And even once you understand it, making the shots is 20 times harder.
Yeah, getting that muscle memory down, like the timing and...
Yeah, like exactly.
Like seeing something that's happening off in the corner and understanding what it means while you're focused on an entirely different part of the board.
Yeah. One thing that made sense to me when learning how to play as a young pinball trainee is you have to control the ball. The ball doesn't control you.
Mm.
You're not... Don't just always be trying to make sure... Oh, don't go in the thing. Don't go in the thing. You got to try to make it do what you want it to do. I'm trying to hit it over here. When you get focused on, oh, just don't go in the hole. That's you're just constantly batting it away. But do use that strategy during multi-ball, though. When there's like four or five balls, just go, don't go in the thing. And don't even look. I just look straight at the flippers, straight down. Don't look at anything that's going on.
I can never figure out when to bump the table. I'm terrible at that.
Oh,
like predicting the course of the ball, like knowing that it's going to drain and having the foresight to bump the table to prevent it from happening.
Oh, to like jerk it like that?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's a real dick move. Don't do that.
Well, that's like what all the pros do, keep the balls alive.
Nudge the table?
Yeah, not to the point that it tilts. But
yeah. Like
if you know it's going to drain, you can bump the table and
save
it.
Try to tilt it a little bit. I don't know. I don't like people who play that aggressively.
Oh.
I can see that, but like I view any, even though the machine doesn't tilt, you're affecting the ball with something else than the flippers, and that's not pure to me.
It's within the letter of the law, but not in the spirit, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I would say so.
Hmm.
That's like steroids right there. You took steroids and you could just rip the ball around. But I guess it is a skill too. So who? What am I to say? Yeah, I just don't like it when people do it. I don't like that machismo. I don't like that the way. Yeah, it's too much for me. I was like, man, we're just trying to chill out and play some pinball. Why are you ripping the machines around?
Why so serious?
Exactly.
What is your favorite thing about performing comedy?
I guess that goes back again to the just feeling good. I do like the camaraderie, though. You're talking about like the scene and stuff. It's good to I like the working on stuff with other people, bouncing ideas off someone. Mostly do that with Jordan. You know, just be like, hey, is this funny? I've been thinking about this. What should we do with this? And I think that really opens up like a writing process and stuff like that, bouncing it off someone else's because they're going through something similar. You don't really have to over explain yourself to someone. A non-comic would maybe give worse suggestions or maybe more obvious suggestions. Whereas you can say just like, here's the premise. It's blah, 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 blah. And they're like, oh, I get where you're going with that. It's like, maybe you should do this. Maybe you should do that. And so I do enjoy that process of, talking about comedy with other comedians. But as far as, you know, performing, it's all just about results. And it is pretty cool. I guess I haven't touched on this that like, cause I've been in bands and you can really easily, just kind of phone it in with the band, or the response doesn't really make the way you are playing it better. Maybe it does, but it's not as much so with a comedian.
Hmm.
Like if my first joke, which I call my first punch, you know, I always use it in like boxing or wrestling terms, you know, I call it getting over is like when you first start, you got to get over. And that's trying to be like on the offensive. You throw out your first punch. If that doesn't land, you're kind of shook for the rest of the fight. Because you put, and you can come back from it. They'll put you on the ropes, but you can come back from it. It can take a second. If the first two don't land, you're kind of in trouble, depending on how quick your jokes are. But I tend to throw more haymakers, you know, like 30, 40 second chunks that if that doesn't land, and all of a sudden you're talking for 2-3 minutes and nobody's made a peep. That's too long. So that can make it pretty enjoyable, is just like the reaction that people give you makes you better. So if they really like it in the first one, then you're feeling even better about the next one. You really start to get into it. You really start to sell it because you feel like they want to hear it. Whereas opposed to like, if they didn't laugh at that one, so this next one, they're probably going to hate too. Mm-hmm. And so that is a very enjoyable thing when you can build off of a audience's response, just in your own attitude.
What is your favorite thing about watching comedy?
Not being able to, not understanding how they did it. Or feeling like I could not recreate that. Like if I thought that up, it wouldn't have worked for me. Like we were saying about the Norm Macdonald stuff. Like if I told those jokes, that would be not great for me. And it happens a lot. A local guy named Steve Iatt does these insane, like it's almost like watching live painting of like the crowd work that he does, because a lot of people maybe will look down on crowd work, but nobody looks down on what Steve Iatt's doing. Because it's just like, he almost starts to create these bits, and he creates inside jokes with the audience through referencing things. Like, so the last time I saw him, he was like, had brought up with someone in the audience that they have an adult child that lives at home, and they also have a vacation home. So every once in a while, he would just go back and tag on that, like this little inside joke between all of us. Nobody else would get this, but you guys all remember that, hey, we'll send the kid up to whatever, and then we'll have a good time in the, you know, stupid stuff like that. It's nothing super inspiring or something that would make like a, like whatever, but in the moment, like watching live comedy, watching him do that and be like, how did he do that? Like, how does every time he go up on stage, he can get people rolling? Like, I'm laughing too. Like, and it just, and as a comic, you can start to get jaded with like bits, you know, like people doing bits. You're like, okay, I know where this is going. And like, kind of heard something similar recently, or, you know, you're not really loving it as much as the comedy club crowd would. And he can really work with them. That crowd work stuff is very hard for me to understand how they would do that. Mm-mm. I don't think I'm that funny, like off the top of my head. I feel like I can, my only crowd work skill is shutting down hecklers. Like when they say something, I can be like, no, it's not. And then get a little laugh and then continue on.
Do you get a lot of hecklers at Tip Top?
Not as much as you'd think. And I think if you do a good job of being like very present or very convincing in your, like, I'm saying something that is important right now, people, it's a small enough bar that most people shut up. Is an easy enough bar, especially as like a not a super new comic. If you're doing okay, you can get everybody in the bar to be quiet and listen to you. Because there's not really a place in the room that you can't hear, like that you feel comfortable talking amongst yourselves, because the comic's going to hear it and make some sort of mention of it. And that happened to me actually last week, as some guy was saying something and I was like, what did you say? And he was totally just talking to someone at his table, and I just let it go. I was like, you're not paying attention. And then I just kept going. And my thing is never let them give control. And so that's my only play with that for hecklers, is to just know how to immediately shut it down. Say the first thing you can think of as quickly as possible. And that's another thing. I was talking about some wrestler, and a guy just said, it was right in the middle of a setup too, you know, an important part of the bit. And the guy goes, God rest his soul. And I just go, he's not dead. And then like, just, and so that got a little laugh. And then I went back, you know, went back into like the setup thing. And so that's completely disarming him. I'm not engaging him at all. I don't want to be like, whoa, you think he's alive, right? You know, that's giving him control. Mm-hmm. I've already got my shit planned out, and whatever, that drunk person was yelling out is not going to turn out better than whatever I had planned. Unless that's your thing, like Steve Iyer, where you're going around asking people, what do you, you know, but those people would never yell out, hey, I got a vacation home, you know, like.
And the final question of the interview portion before we take a short break, if you could tell your 16-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
I think it would be to get into comedy. Just start doing comedy right now. You already like it. Just do it. Figure out a way to do it. I guess 16 is too young, maybe. Or just start writing jokes. Think about it more seriously.
There's a 20-year-old dude at the Tip Top when I went.
Yeah, yeah. The young people do it. Yeah, I mean, the young people can be funny. We get a, seems like actually a pretty good training ground of comedians is GVSU. Hmm. They've got their own little show out there that you have to be, there's no outside, you know, like a piece of shit like me can't come in there and be like, let me tell you how to do the jokes, boys. And, so there's not like people like that. So I think it's just among themselves. And then we've had quite a few funny people come out of that, like Evan Wallace was a few years ago, came out of it. He's now moved. Mario Martinez, who also moved. But they're cool guys who come in and leave. Right now we have Pete Sender, who's a pretty funny guy from GVSU out there. All young guys who are really funny. Grant Stiles, I think, is the funniest of the young guys. He came from Kelvin. He's coming back soon, we hope. He said he's going back to Cleveland to work for the summer, or Ohio, wherever he lives in Ohio. But yeah, a lot of those younger college kids can be very funny.
Yeah, the guy last week did a Minecraft joke that killed me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a very targeted joke.
It is.
And people that get it really appreciate it.
Uh-huh. And that's the beauty of Tip Top is people, there's somebody there understands your reference there. But yeah, if I could go back, I would say maybe just get into that more so than music. Music should be more of your hobby. Because you're not going to be into it forever. Hmm. Especially playing music. It never was. And then comedy has always been a bigger interest for me. And something that sticks with me always. Like I've gone through maybe bouts of depression. I don't know if that's like a... Maybe it's not the best term for it, but just bouts of indifference, which I guess is what depression is, where I don't care about much of anything, but comedy and comedy specials are always something that would bring me some sort of enjoyment, and I still would never lose interest in. When you're feeling those bouts of indifference, you don't want to listen to your favorite band. You don't want to go to a concert. You probably didn't want to go to see a live comic, but when Louis C.K. came out with a new special, you bet your ass I downloaded it that day. Even no matter how shitty I felt. And maybe I didn't laugh that much, but it was still an interest. It still broke through all of that. And so I think as an older person, I'm realizing now that that's something that, even, you know, as a kid, I always wanted to be funny. It made was much more important to me at school to be funny than it was to do well. And that's where I met a lot of my friends that I have now. And a lot of that was just based on trying to make them laugh in class and just doing bits in class, you know, oh, I'm going to say something. I'm going to heckle the teacher basically, you know, and that's where heckling should be left to is like grade school. If you're an adult and you're still heckling, come on.
I've been meaning to set up a musical transition into the break period, but I haven't had time yet. So if you wouldn't mind doing some sort of performance, whatever you feel like doing, and then ring the bell when you're done, then we'll take a short break. Please.
All right. I'm going to start with a little... Gonna go for a Bjork feel here.